Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and today we're going back to school again. That is enough of all of this election shenanigans and branch nonsense and the vote no. It's all just so negative, I guess. I mean, I feel like it's important, and obviously I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe in it and feel like it needed to be done. But sometimes, just gotta get back to teaching. I mean, ultimately, that's who I am at heart. So, in episode one, we only got through 10 slides of the first day of the PowerPoints. We're gonna pick up where we left off now at slide number 11, and that is delivering packages with courtesy and professionalism. So, this page essentially just talks about our policy of say no to the throw. We see videos of carriers just chucking people's packages, being careless with them. And you have to realize that it benefits no one, including you. You know, that's done out of laziness or just out of apathy. And it's not beneficial. You think about how much time you save by just chucking somebody's package instead of setting it down nicely. And we're talking a matter of a couple of seconds. And you're not saving yourself that time, because now you have the aggravation. If the video gets out or if the customer gets mad at you and confronts you, you're going to lose all that time that you think you saved. And then on top of that, you're damaging our relationship with the public, a relationship that as you go on in your career, you're going to depend on that relationship. You're going to depend on people looking out for you, people giving you that bottle of water, people letting you use their bathroom. And no, you're not supposed to go into their house. And maybe I'll tell a story about that later down the road. I have had to do that twice. And it's never a good circumstance when you're so desperate that you have to go into somebody's house to use the bathroom. But if you've been chucking their packages, they're not going to let you do that. And if you do to their bathroom what I did to their bathroom, they're not going to let you do that again. So anyway, you know, and there are other considerations with people's packages. Like when you put a package into a mailbox, make sure that the package can be taken out, because it's a lot easier to shove a package in than it is to pull that package back out. You know, you need to be able to like get your fingers around it to pull it out. Or don't put a package in front of somebody's door where they can't open the door, or don't put it in their walkway where they're going to trip over it if they come out the door and they're not looking for it. I see Amazon and UPS do that stuff all the time, and it drives me nuts. In fact, I've even seen ones where the package is blocking the door so that the person can't even open their door, and that is not okay. So please, guys, when you're delivering those packages, give some thought to where you put it, and of course, say no to the throw. Moving on. It is our responsibility to protect all the mail, money, and equipment that is given to us. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to fend off any thieves. You know, if somebody threatens you, then give them what they want and just try to be a good witness. But be careful with any mail that's given to you. Obviously, you know, it's your job to safeguard that mail. And it's your job to make sure that you don't destroy the truck. I mean, the trucks are mostly destroyed on their own anyway, but you know, do what you can to take care of the things that are given to you and the equipment, you know, the trays, the buckets, all of that stuff. That's your responsibility. Next, mail only goes in approved locations, and that means a mail receptacle or a door slot or into the customer's hand. So if you're delivering to places where they have screen doors in front of their front door, you can't put the mail just between the screen door and the front door. It has to go into a mailbox, through the door slot, something like that. It has to be an approved mail receptacle. And then the last point here on slide 12, it says you are not authorized to open the mail. So that should be obvious, but it's worth repeating, because carriers get in trouble for it and even get fired for it. Guys, it's not your mail. The mail never belongs to you. It always belongs to the sender and to the recipient. It is never yours. So you can't open it, you can't fish through it, and that's all mail, not just like private letters. And that even includes the weekly ads, what longtime carriers will call advos, or maybe Red Plums, or whatever they are where you deliver the mail. Those weekly ads that we put in the box, those aren't yours either. And so if you see a nice coupon in there from Subway and you want to go get yourself a sandwich, Can you take that coupon? No. No, you cannot. Even if that mail is destined for the UBM, the undeliverable bulk business mail, which we'll talk more about later, even if it's undeliverable and it's going to get shredded, that stuff never belongs to you, ever. We had a carrier who was fired for going to Sunset Station, which is a casino here in Las Vegas, right near where I live. And back before COVID, they had a buffet that was pretty good, you know, and it was affordable. And this carrier was going to that buffet every day after work for dinner with a 2-for-1 coupon. And eventually, as I understand the story, the cashier noticed that, hey, this guy's been coming in here every day with this 2-for-1 coupon, and we only mail out one to every house. How is he getting all these extra coupons? And they do a little investigating, realize the guy's a letter carrier, and well, now the answer is obvious. Is he was just taking the extra coupons and using them for himself. And so he got busted, and as far as I know, he lost his job and maybe even went to jail over an $8 buffet coupon. So to reiterate, it's not your mail. You are never entitled to anything that is in the mail. Just put it in the box or put it where it goes. Next slide. If you do any of this bad stuff, if you delay the mail, if you desert the mail, if you destroy the mail, if you obstruct the mail, any of these things, there are federal laws that cover all this, and you're going to find yourself in federal prison, out of a job, fine, you know, subject to fines, all that stuff. It's all bad news. So don't do any of that stuff. You know, one of the things that it talks about here is the delay of mail. If you delay the mail, then yes, you are subject to criminal and civil penalties under federal law. And that means that, like, all mail that is given to you today, you have to deliver it today. And you don't get to decide that, oh, I'm just not going to deliver some of this mail. You know, I don't feel like it. That is not your place to decide. Management has to make that decision. And that means even on ad day, if you decide, like, oh, I need to get 8 hours today so I can only deliver half my ads, that's all well and good, but you got to run that by management. And management has to give you explicit authorization not to deliver those ads or not to deliver whatever portion of the mail is assigned to you. And then when they do that, there's a form that you have to fill out that we'll talk about in a future module. It's the form 1571, the undelivered mail report. And that report covers you for the delay of mail. That this way, when the auditors come into the station and they see this mail that's sitting behind at your case, they'll know, oh, management approved the delay of mail, and they don't have to go and find you and arrest you. So all that stuff is very important. It is also your responsibility to reduce the financial losses of the Postal Service. So this means things like, we call it revenue protection. Like, you're going to look for stamps, for example, on items. And you're going to look for fake postage. And you're going to look for scams. And when you're new, you're not necessarily going to recognize that stuff. But over time, you'll get a sense for what stamps are supposed to look like. You'll get a sense for what the regular stamps are that, like, a normal residential customer would use versus what kind of stamps businesses would use. And you'll recognize that. And so when you see insufficient postage on something, you have to do what you can to collect that postage. If you see it on somebody's outgoing mail, maybe they're sending out a big envelope that would have, like, a diploma in it, you know, something that's the size of, like, a full-size piece of paper. One stamp is not going to be enough to mail that thing out. And so you'll have to, like, knock on their door and say, hey, there's not enough postage on here. And then they might ask you, well, how much postage does it need? And unfortunately, the answer to that a lot of times is, I don't know. You know, it gets complicated when you start getting into, like, envelope size and thickness and weight and even destination and all that stuff. It gets complicated. You know, you might have a general sense of, like, well, put 2 more stamps on it and it should be fine. But regardless, that's the kind of thing you're looking for. I also look for that sort of thing just because of laziness. So, for example, when I'm delivering certified mail. So certified mail is a product where it requires a signature for delivery, and that proves that that piece of mail got delivered. And so it'll be used in, like, legal proceedings where they need to show a judge that, yes, I sent this demand letter to this person. So when I'm delivering certified mail, I will look at the postage. Because for a service like that, it costs a lot more money. You know, a regular first class stamp right now is in the neighborhood of like 80 cents. And a certified mail is like $5. And so if I just see a regular stamp on that piece of certified mail, that is not enough postage to get that delivered. And so I will bring that to my accountables clerk, the person who is responsible for those sort of items in the post office, and I'll give it back to him. Say, hey, this didn't have enough postage on it, and now that's one less thing I have to do that day. Or if it has a return receipt, which is this little green postcard that's on the back, that's like a physical receipt that gets mailed back to the sender, that's another $3 or so for that thing. And so if I see a certified letter with return receipt and it only has $5 postage on it, this doesn't have enough postage. And I'll give it back to my accountables clerk. And so I am doing the good work of revenue protection, making sure people don't try to get services that they didn't pay for. And I'm also serving my own laziness. So look at that, a win-win situation. So anyway, that's part of our job, is to make sure that that stuff has proper postage. Another thing that you're going to look for postage-wise is that the service that the person is using has to match the postage that goes on it. And where this will come up more frequently is with like priority mail. So we offer free supplies for priority mail, where we'll offer the boxes. So you can get like a flat rate box and put priority postage on it and mail it off, and the box, you know, we give you the box. So what will happen sometimes is people will put first class postage on a priority box, or they'll put ground advantage postage on a priority box. Well, the priority box says right on it that it requires priority postage, and that might be $15, whereas the first class postage might be $7, and the ground advantage might be $4, and the box requires $15 of postage, and so the postage has to match the packaging. So the priority boxes all have like this red border around them. And then we have express mail packages of the same type, and they have a blue border around them, and that's way more expensive. So sometimes people will use an express box and only put priority postage on it. That is not sufficient. They need additional postage. And again, this is all part of revenue protection. Next slide. We're up to all the way up to slide 15 now. Carrier appearance. So you are required to maintain a neat and clean appearance. You're required to be in uniform and to wear your proper footwear, the leather or leather-like with the non-slip sole, black shoes, and you know, the regular mailman costume, I call it. All of that is required. And it's all outlined in this manual called the ELM, the Employee and Labor Relations Manual. And it says in there, like, what kind of uniform you're supposed to wear. And management can even tell you, like, certain times a year, like, you're not allowed to wear shorts. Most managers don't do that, but some do, and that is within their rights. So the nice thing is you don't have to be held to this standard until you actually get your uniform allowance after your probation is over. And then you can go out and buy this stuff from an approved vendor and get all your uniform needs, or get at least enough to get you by for a while. Because frankly, the uniform allowance as it is now is fairly inadequate for how expensive the uniforms have gotten. But anyway, that's your appearance. And then you're also supposed to conduct your personal life in a way that reflects favorably on the Postal Service. And there are provisions for that as well in that Employee and Labor Relations Manual, where if you get in trouble for something outside of the Postal Service, it can affect your employment at the post office if it winds up reflecting poorly. I'll give you an example. Like, let's say you're running an illegal cockfighting ring and you get busted and you wind up on the news. If the news report says local letter carrier Chris Johnson was arrested for running a cockfighting ring, you're probably going to lose your job. Now, the way the provision is written in the ELM, if it just says local dirtbag Chris Johnson is arrested for a cockfighting ring, you probably won't lose your job for that because it wound up not reflecting on the Postal Service. But better, don't run an illegal cockfighting ring and don't be a dirtbag. So anyway, but that is actually part of your responsibility at the Postal Service, is even in your private life, you're expected to conduct yourself in a way that's not going to bring shame to the post office. Now we start to get into some jargon. I had a professor in college tell me that all classes are really vocabulary classes. And it makes a lot of sense. You know, once you learn the language of the post office, for example, it makes things a lot easier. So when I teach this in an actual carrier academy, I will ask the students, hey, how many of you guys, by show of hands, know right off the top of your head what DPS is? And typically a maximum of one person will raise their hand. Well, any carrier who's been doing this for more than a few weeks, maybe even a few days, knows what DPS, well, frankly, by the time they leave the academy, they know what DPS is. And that's part of learning the job, is we have all these abbreviations for things, we have all these form numbers. And the good news is, most of the time, the form, even though it has a form number, we typically just call it what it is. Like, for example, a form 8076, 8076. How many of you guys know right off the top of your head what that is? I actually had to come up with that just right now off the top of my head, but I know it from teaching this class. A form 8076 is a vacation hold. And so, lucky for you, generally we'll just call it a vacation hold. It's the form that a customer fills out when they're going to go on vacation. They want us to hold their mail for them. So that there's that one. But then there's other forms that we use all the time that we do call them by their name or by their number, like the form 3996, 3996. This is the form that's required to be filled out when you're going to need overtime. And so that one is one that you will have to memorize that number because it's called Carrier Auxiliary Control. And the overtime help that we get, like, I'm going to need 2 hours of overtime. Okay, so they're going to have a CCA come and help me with that 2 hours of overtime. Technically, that's called auxiliary assistance. That CCA is giving me auxiliary assistance for an hour. And the 3996 is the controlling document for that. It's the way I let management know that I'm going to need overtime. And then it's the way that the auxiliary assistance documents the overtime that they helped me with and so on, or the assistance they gave me. So that one you need to know the number. But there's all kinds of abbreviations and acronyms and form numbers, and it's stuff that you pick up over time. Like the LLV, the long life vehicle. That's the normal mail truck that we've been driving for 30 plus years. There's MTE, mail transport equipment, and that's things like the hamper, which is typically this orange wheeled cart that is, you pour, like, put your parcels in there and you move it from place to place. And then there's a bigger version of that that's all metal and it's like a big cube, and that's called a wire or wire tainer. And then there's an even bigger one that has these big wheels on it. It's intended to go into the tractor trailers, and that's called an OTR, which I think stands for over the road, because those are used in over the road trucking. And the list goes on. I mean, it's endless. We have these things that look like shopping carts and they're metal, and those are called U-carts, like the letter U. I'm not sure. Maybe utility cart. I bet you that's what that stands for. But the list goes on and it's endless. And when somebody tells you, hey, you're going to need to fill out a 3971 if you want to do that, don't just nod and smile. Ask them, what is a 3971? I just want to take a day off. I don't even know what a 3971 is. By the way, that is the request for or notification of absence. And we'll talk about those. We'll talk about a lot of this stuff a little bit later as it goes on. But since I brought up the 3971, that is if you need a day off, whether it's for medical care or just for vacation or just to rest or whatever, that's the form that you use in order to inform management that, hey, I'm going to need this particular day off. And then there's all these provisions around how management approves it and so on. And that all comes down the road. There's jargon inside the post office with what we call different areas, like where in the post office, people come and pick up their mail. They can rent out these little boxes. Those are post office boxes. And we call that area like the box section. There's the registry cage in your station. It may not be a cage, but this is where you pick up your accountable items, like where the clerks or where the carriers get their keys. And where you might sign if you receive an express mail that you're accountable for, or a registered mail, something like that. That goes through the accountables cage or the registry cage. And the why it's called that is because in many cases, it's an actual physical, like metal cage that's bolted to the floor for security, and everything gets locked up inside of there. Where I work, it's just a closet. It's like a converted custodian closet or something. And we still call it the cage because, you know, in many post offices, that's what it is. We also have names for the different jobs that a carrier can do. For example, when you are newly hired, typically you are going to be a CCA, a city carrier assistant. Maybe you're in one of the areas where you get hired indirectly as a PTF, a part-time flexible. So this is a career position, but you don't have a fixed schedule. You don't have your own route. You're going to work as needed, whatever hours are needed by management. When I started 19 years ago, that's what I was. I came in immediately as a PTF, part-time flexible, and that's what I did until a full-time regular position opened up. And that's the next level, is full-time regular, where you have your own route, you have your own assignment, you're doing the same route every day, and you have that regular schedule. There's also a position, but there's not many of them, but it's called part-time regular, and that would be for people who work like in the collections department, where they're not necessarily going to work 40 hours every week, but they're still career regular carriers. And then finally, there's a position called a carrier technician. And this is somebody who has a string of routes where we deliver mail 6 days a week, but we only work 5 days a week. So like right now, as I record this, today is my scheduled day off and it's Wednesday. So I'm off every Sunday. And then my other day off this week is Wednesday. So on my day off, somebody has to deliver the mail to the people in the neighborhood where I deliver. And that's the carrier technician. So on my day off today, the carrier technician will deliver my route. Somebody else has their day off tomorrow, so the carrier technician will move to that route and deliver that route on Thursday. And then somebody else's route on Friday, and so on through the cycle. And that technician will have five different routes that they carry on each person's day off. So they have, instead of being responsible for one route, they're responsible for five routes. And this is considered a higher level position. They are a carrier technician level six, or it used to be level six under some old contractual provisions. Now it's level two, but post office is slow to change. And so they're still considered, they call them a T6 for short, a carrier technician level six. And so you'll hear that, a T6, it means the same thing. Although technically, now they're level two, so they're T2, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator. So anyway, those are all the different positions that a carrier can hold. And then there are other positions in the post office, like we have mail handlers. Those are people like down at the processing plants who move mail from place to place. They'll push the big carts and little forklifts and stuff and move things from place to place, do a lot of the heavy lifting. They load and unload the trucks, things like that. And then there's clerks. Clerks handle the mail on a more individual level, but they don't go out on the street. So maybe they're the ones in your station who spread the mail out to the carrier cases, or they spread the parcels out for the carriers, things like that. That's all done by clerks. The people who work up at the window and do customer service, those are clerks. Those are all different types of clerk positions. And then we have rural carriers. So a rural carrier is not that different from a city carrier, except that they are completely separate. Everything they do is separate from the things that we do as city carriers, and never the two shall meet. So as a city carrier, you should never be doing work on a rural carrier's route and vice versa. If that is happening, that's a grievance and you should let your union steward know. And also, as a city carrier, you should never take advice from a rural carrier because they have different rules. And boy, rural rules, it's too many of those type of words. But anyway, one of those rules that always causes controversy, I'll give you an example, is let's say you're delivering a mounted type of delivery, like we'll say out-the-window delivery. It's technically called curbside. So this is where you're just sitting in the truck and you pull up to a mailbox and you lean out the window, put the mail in the box, and that's how you deliver it. That is curbside delivery. So the question will come up, well, somebody's car was parked in front of their mailbox, so how am I supposed to handle it? A rural carrier will tell you, just drive on by and deliver the, you know, bring it back to the station, try it again tomorrow. But that is not what we do on the city side. On the city side, there are very strict, very clear instructions in the M41, in that rule book, that say that when a box is blocked, you're going to dismount the truck where it's safe. So like pull over to the side of the road, park, curb your wheels, set the brake, put it in park, take out the key, and then hop out with the mail, walk up to the mailbox, put it in the box, and then go and get back in your truck and drive on. That's the way we handle it on the city side. And so yes, there are rural carriers. They often share post offices with city carriers, but they are a completely different craft, and they do things their own way. In addition to that, there are custodians at the post office, and they're the ones who clean up. My station happens to have the world's greatest custodian. In fact, he won the Custodian of the Year Award for 2023-2024. His name is Rob, and he's the best. And then we have management. So your immediate supervisor is probably a customer service supervisor. They oversee the operations of the post office. They're the ones who give you your instructions each day. And generally, that's who you're going to deal with all the time. You deal with your immediate supervisor, whoever it is in the morning, whoever it is in the evening. You may have more than one, but there'll be one typically who will be assigned to your zip code or your portion of your zip code or whatever, and that's who you're going to deal with. Then above them, there's the manager, and they run the whole station. And then in some cases, the manager is also the postmaster for that area. So, you know, you'll learn what those are pretty quick at your station if you don't know those already. Your station manager may actually be the postmaster. If you're in a really small station, that postmaster may also be your immediate supervisor, and they're the only one. So, you know, it varies. And then there's another level of management above that, which is like the MPU, the manager of post office operations, or we also have the MCSO, I think, and maybe that's, well, either way. There's like tons of levels of management. So the one that you're generally going to deal with most often is the regular frontline supervisor. And they're really going to have a big impact on your quality of life if you're a CCA, because they're the ones who are going to make your schedule. They're the ones who decide what you're going to be doing each day. And it is important to understand that they are human beings. And sometimes they come off as monsters. And I get it. I've had my share of monster supervisors. And some of them are really decent and good people. The important thing for you as a carrier is that you need to learn the rules and the proper way to do the job. And if you do that, then it essentially makes you discipline proof. And while you're a CCA, management has essentially complete control over your schedule, but that's about it. And they can, other than that, like it's really hard for them to discipline you or to give you any other hard time if you're doing things the right way by the book. You know, where carriers really get themselves in trouble is they start cutting corners, they start doing things wrong out of laziness or trying to rush or whatever their reason might be. And then management now has this opening to discipline and even fire them. And that's what we want to avoid. So there's a question that I get asked from time to time, which is why are the supervisors so awful? And again, they're not all awful. We recently had a retirement of a supervisor at my station that like people who had retired showed up, carriers, to honor this supervisor when she retired. She was incredible. Honestly, she's the best boss I've ever had at any job ever. She was phenomenal. But that's the exception. And so often supervisors are cranky and they yell at you and they put pressure on you and they're not okay. So why is it like that? Well, something that you have to realize is, at least in my opinion, and in the opinion of many people who have that job, the frontline supervisor is the worst job in the entire post office. Because, for one thing, our union is really strong. I know sometimes it doesn't always feel like it, and it varies depending on what kind of steward you have. But the rules that our union has in place, they're pretty strong, and they govern like the way the job is supposed to be done. And they also cover carriers for discipline, where the union will fight back and often get discipline removed. And so it's very hard for supervisors to enforce the things they're trying to enforce. Like, what the supervisor really wants is for you to go faster. But there's no rules that say you have to go faster. The only rule that says anything about speed is that while you're casing, getting your mail ready in the morning, you have to be able to case 18 letters in 1 minute and 8 flats in 1 minute. And again, flats are like the bigger magazine-sized items. That's really the only speed rule in the post office. And then when you pull that mail down to take it to the street, you have to be able to pull down 70 pieces in a minute. But these rules are, you know, these speed standards are pretty easy. The idea is that 100% of people who work at the post office can meet them. But once you're out on the street, there is no speed standard. And so management is under this pressure to try to get, you know, use less overtime and get everybody off the street or whatever. And so they lean on carriers, but they don't really have the rules on their side. The union can fight against them. And so it's very difficult for them to, you know, they don't really have the means to get carriers to do this. And then on top of that, from the other end, they're getting upper management just leaning on them constantly and giving them these mandates that are just ridiculous that, you know, it'll be like the day after the holiday and the postmaster will say, I don't want you guys to use any overtime today. You better get all those carriers back and off the clock in 8 hours. And yes, postmaster, but dude, there's no way you can do something like that. And so this combination of strong union and ridiculous demands from upper management puts supervisors in an impossible position, and it makes it a very difficult job. So try to have a little sympathy for them, because again, these are the people who are creating your schedule if you're not a full-time regular. And so you're going to have to try to cooperate with them and try to, you know, try to get along. And if you can treat them like human beings, then at least you've got a chance of them treating you like human beings in return. All right, so that's going to do us for today. We got through more slides this time, so that's good. When we come back, we're going to talk about the time clock, which this Carrier Academy is so old. It even talks about punch card time clocks on here. So anyway, we'll talk about the actual current time card procedures, which are all on your scanner, but that'll wait until next time. So thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you then.